If you want to get your Bibles, we're going to be looking at 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and chapter 11 this morning. We are almost finished with this book. We've got two classes left. We have this week and then 2 weeks from now. And so we're going to be studying chapters 10 and 11 this morning. We'll look at chapters 12 and 13 2 weeks from now as we finish up this book. When you get to these last four chapters of the book of 2 Corinthians, if you just read, there's 13 chapters. If you just read this book from chapters 1 through 13, you will notice when you get to chapter 10 that there's a change in the tone that Paul uses. In the last four chapters, 10, 11, 12, and 13, Paul's tone gets more severe. It becomes more harsh than it was in the first nine chapters. And the reason for that are those false teachers that had come in and were troubling the church. There were those members of the church, even members of the church there, who were skeptical, who were criticizing Paul, who were calling him into question, who were trying to discredit him and his teachings. And so these last four chapters seem to be more directed at that group of critics, that group of false teachers that had come into the church. You might remember, go back to chapter 2 for just a minute to see this term so that you can maybe see it in context. Look in chapter 2 where Paul at the very beginning of that chapter talked about the fact that he had written to them. And one of the most difficult things that he wrote in 1 Corinthians was about withdrawing themselves from that brother who was walking disorderly. Look in verse 5 of 2 Corinthians chapter 2, where it says, if anyone has caused grief, he's not grieved me, but he's grieved all of you to some extent. Of course, he says not to be too severe, but this punishment, the withdrawal, the act of church discipline that they administered, he says this punishment was inflicted by the majority. He says that's sufficient for such a man. It's interesting in that verse that Paul seems to say in the church there was a majority of the members who were obedient to that first letter that he wrote. There was a majority of the members who were striving to do what was right. When you get to these last four chapters, while we don't find the word minority to talk about the smaller group that was in the church there, that seems to be who Paul is addressing. And he gets very harsh in some of his comments in these last four chapters. Look in chapter 10. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul says, now I, Paul, myself, am pleading with you, and I'm pleading with you by the meekness and the gentleness of Christ. Does that mean that he's coming across in a weak tone, in a weak manner? If you think about the meekness and the gentleness of Christ, do you think about Jesus being a weakling? Jesus being a pushover? Is that what's being addressed here? Paul says, I'm trying to come to you in the spirit of Christ, but were there moments even in the life of Christ where while he was meek and while he was gentle, he was also firm? When Jesus walked into that temple where the money changers were, did he just... Did he have a nice talk with them? Did he try to... What are they doing today? You don't tell the children no, you just redirect them in a more positive manner is what they're supposedly doing with the young children today. Don't tell them no, just redirect them positive. Is that what Jesus did? When he saw the money changers, did he say, well, I don't want to say no, and I don't want to tell them they're doing bad, so did he just kind of redirect them and try to push... No. You know, he turned those tables over. When Jesus was trying to address those Pharisees and those scribes in Matthew chapter 23, how many times did he call them hypocrites? It's not a very nice word, is it? I mean, if you walked up to somebody in between class and worship this morning and hugged their neck and said, how you doing, hypocrite? It's not a nice thing to say on Mother's Day, is it? How many times did Jesus call them hypocrites? Called them for what they were. Paul says, I'm pleading with you in the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in presence, and this seems to be a charge that was brought against him, who in the presence I am lowly or timid among you. That's what was being charged, that when he was there, he was kind of a wimp when he was there. But being absent, when I'm not with you, all of a sudden I become bold and harsh toward you. Look over in verse 10, where you see a very similar statement, where this charge is made against him is for his letters, they say. His letters are weighty and powerful. Boy, he can really come across strong in his letters, but his bodily presence, when he's here, well, he's kind of weak. He's kind of... Here's this charge that's being made against Paul, is that that he's inconsistent. His charge is that he's kind of a wimp, you know. And when he's there with you, he won't really say much to you. But boy, he can really get behind that computer, and he can really get behind the keyboard. And you know, people who will say things behind the keyboard that they wouldn't say in person. You know, people who will write things on a computer, on the internet, on Facebook, that you would never find them saying in person. That's what they're charging against Paul, is that he's two different kinds of people, and that he's not bold enough, he's not strong enough to stand up to them in person. Look in verse 2. Paul says, "But I beg you that when I am present, I don't want to be bold. I don't want to be harsh when I am there with you, that I may not be bold with that confidence by which I intend to be bold against some who think of us as if we walked according to the flesh." That's the accusation. That's another charge that's being made, is that they're walking according to the flesh. And Paul says, we walk in the flesh. There's a difference. Verse 3 says, there's a difference. We walk in the flesh. Is there any human being who doesn't walk in the flesh? Well, we all walk in the flesh. But Paul says we're not walking according to the flesh. We walk in the flesh, but we do not war according to the flesh. We don't use worldly tactics in our efforts. Look in verse 4. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they're mighty in God. What are the weapons of warfare that a Christian has? What weapons is Paul talking about? The Word of God? Prayer, somebody said? What are these weapons? What does Ephesians 6 tell us about the armor of God? You've got the shield of faith. You've got the breastplate of righteousness. You've got the sword of the Spirit. And down in verse 18 of Ephesians 6, it says, and with all of these things, by prayer and supplication. Paul says, we're not using carnal warfare. The weapons that we use are mighty in God. What are they used for in verse 4? For pulling down strongholds. When you have the Word of God, when you have the weapons of God, then those fortresses of evil need to be pulled down. When we have the weapons of God, verse 5 says, casting down arguments. You might have speculations, or another word there, casting down irrational speculations or arguments. And casting down every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. And bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Do we need to be doing any of that? Or was that just Paul? Are there any strongholds? Are there any fortresses of evil that we need to be trying to pull down? Are there any arguments? Are there any irrational speculations against God that we need to be trying to deal with? Or do we just let them go? Well, you know, they're just going to say those kind of things. We'll just let them. Well, those we'll just people, they're just going to believe that. There's not really much that we can do about it. Or are we supposed to do something? Are we supposed to stand up for righteousness? Are we supposed to speak the truth, to do it in love, but to speak the truth? All right, when in Ephesians 6, when it talks about the armor of God, how many times does he say, having done all, take a stand? Don't be a wimp. Don't let the world, don't let evil overcome evil with good, as he would say in Romans chapter 12. But what we need to do is to take the Word of God and to use it to try to steer people towards righteousness. Look in verse 7. Paul says, do you look at things according to the outward appearance? They were judging Paul, but they were trying to judge him based upon outward appearance. Is that an easy thing to do? To look upon somebody, to judge somebody according to their outward appearance. Is that easy? Well, that's a lot easier to do than to try to actually get in and figure out the truth of the matter. Just look at their appearance. What is when Samuel was looking for the second king after Saul, looking for the next king of Israel in 1 Samuel chapter 16? What did God say about where he looks? Man looks on the outward appearance. Where does God look? God looks on the heart. Man's all concerned about the outward appearance, but the thing that we need to be concerned about is someone's heart. If anyone is convinced in himself, if anyone is convinced in himself that he belongs to Christ, that he is Christ, then he must also consider this, that just as he is Christ, even so are we. Just because they claim that they're Christ, that they belong to Christ, and we do not, doesn't make it the case. Verse 8, for even if I should boast somewhat more about our authority, the authority that God gave to us, the authority that Paul had was given to him by the Lord. And for what purposes? It was given to him for edification. The authority that Paul had as an apostle was given to him to teach and to build people up. The intent was not to destroy, he says. The intent was not for their destruction. Although Paul says that could come about. Look at verse 11. All these accusations that are made against him, he says, let such a person consider this. If they're going to make these accusations, that what we are in word by letters when we are absent, such we will also be indeed when we are present. If you don't change, this minority of individuals that was in the church that was trying to stand against Paul, was trying to discredit his teaching, Paul said, if you don't change, then when I am there, I am going to have to be more harsh than I have been. Look in verse 12. He says, for we dare not class ourselves. We don't classify ourselves. We don't categorize ourselves. We don't class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves. You know anybody who commends themselves? Paul says, we're not trying to be like these people who commend themselves. Is it Proverbs chapter 27 where God says, don't build yourself up. Don't praise yourself with your own lips. Let somebody else take care of praising you. But you know anybody who praises himself with their own lips? Paul says, we're not doing that. We don't classify ourselves. We're not comparing ourselves with those who are building themselves up. But they, these individuals who commend themselves, they are measuring themselves by what standard? They are measuring themselves by themselves. They're comparing themselves. What are they comparing themselves to? Each other. They're measuring themselves by themselves, comparing themselves among themselves. And Paul says, that's not very wise. Do we sometimes do that? Can we fall into that trap today where we, instead of comparing ourselves, instead of measuring ourselves next to some objective standard, that maybe we start measuring ourselves against each other? Could somebody say, well, you know, I'm having a hard time, but boy, I'm a whole lot better Christian than that person because, you know, they're hardly ever here. I don't hardly ever see them do anything, hear about them. I'm not doing great, but I'm doing really good compared to that person. Are we going to measure ourselves subjectively against somebody else? Or maybe go the other direction and say, you know, I look at the elders and boy, I could never have the faith that the elders have. I could never be that strong. I'll never be able to get to that level. Can we compare ourselves in that direction too and do ourselves harm? Paul says that's not wise. It's not wise to try to measure ourselves next to somebody else. Where's our measuring rod? Our measuring rod is Christ. Are we ever going to compare? Are we ever going to measure up to the fullness of the stature of Christ? Well, not by ourselves. Not by ourselves. But through the grace of God, through the mercy of God, can we stand next to the Lord? Do we get to be able to call Him our brother? Do we have the opportunity to be able to call Him our Savior and our friend? Here's the objective standard, and that's the only thing that matters. That's the only measurement that matters. So he says in verse 13, "We, however, we're not going to boast beyond measure. We're not going to brag about anything beyond measure, but we will within the limits of the sphere which God appointed or assigned us." Do you remember who God had sent Paul to? Did God send Paul to the Jews? Who did God send Paul to preach the gospel to primarily? The Gentiles. Paul says, there's a sphere. There is a, maybe your translation has the word field. There's a field into which God has sent us. And he says, that field, the end of verse 13, especially includes you. "For we are not overextending ourselves, as though our authority did not extend to you. For it was to you that we came with the gospel of Christ. Not boasting of things beyond measure, that is, in other men's labors, but having hope that as your faith is increased, we shall be greatly enlarged by you," verse 16, "to preach the gospel in the regions beyond you." Notice the comparison here in verses 15 and 16. Paul says, we want, in verse 16, to go and preach the gospel to other regions. What was one thing that was going to be able to make him do that in verse 15? What was one aspect, one thing that was necessary in order for him to be able to go preach in other places? What needed to happen to the faith of the church at Corinth? It needed to grow. It needed to increase. There's a direct correlation between the increase of faith and the spreading of the gospel. Do you believe that? Is there a direct correlation between how strong someone's faith is, how much someone's faith is increasing, and how much the gospel is being spread? Is the gospel, are we going to spread the gospel if our faith is weak? If our faith is not increasing, we're not going to go and teach and share that which we ourselves are having trouble believing and being convinced of. There's a direct correlation. So if the gospel is not being spread as it should, whose feet is that to be laid at? Is that the devil's fault? Is it the devil's fault that the gospel's not being spread as it should? Is it our society's fault? They're resistant to it. Is it society's fault that the gospel's not being spread as it should? There's a direct correlation between the faith of Christians and the spreading of the gospel. And we don't need to allow certain things to impede our desire to go and to preach the gospel. Look in verse 18. Paul says, it doesn't matter who commends himself. He says, it's not he who commends himself that is approved, but it is whom the Lord commends. That's the one that's approved. That's all that matters. The only thing that matters is pleasing God. And when we please God and the Lord commends us, that's all that matters. Look in chapter 11. It's interesting when you read this, it's hard to figure out what exactly Paul's saying. In chapter 11, verse 1, Paul says, "Oh, that you would bear with me." That you would tolerate, does anybody have the word put up with me? That you would bear with me in a little folly, in a little foolishness. And indeed you are, as you're reading this, you do bear with me. There were these criticisms, there were these accusations that were made against Paul, and the only thing he could do, or one thing he needed to do in order to answer them, was to get down on their level. There's an interesting part of the book of Proverbs. You remember these two verses that are back to back in the book of Proverbs, where it says, "Answer a fool according to his folly." And the verse right next to it says, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly." Well, which one am I supposed to do? Back to back verses. Don't answer a fool according to his folly, and then answer a fool according to his folly. Does the Bible contradict itself? How are you supposed to answer? How do you decide? Are there some foolish arguments that you just need to avoid and stay away from? You're not going to do any good. Yeah. Are there some foolish arguments that you're going to have to get down and answer it? Because the impact of that foolishness, is it possible that the impact of that foolishness is going to impact the souls of others? That's what's happening in this church. You got these crazy people that are coming into the church and they're trying to run the Apostle Paul down. They're coming up with all of these accusations. Well, you can't trust him. He writes one thing and then he says another thing in person. You can't trust him because, you know, he's comparing himself to this. And we get to chapter 11 and he says, you know, he didn't even take money from you. What kind of guy doesn't even take money for, you know, he won't even let you pay him. You can't trust him. It's kind of backwards, don't you think? Because the false teachers were the ones who were coming in and demanding that they get paid, but their accusation, well, he wouldn't even take money. You can't trust him. Here were the souls in the church in Corinth that Paul couldn't allow their souls to be jeopardized. And so, to a certain extent, he had to get down. He had to get down in the trenches. He had to get down in the dirt, in the mud, with these mudslingers and try to answer. And so that's what he's talking about in chapter 11, verse 1. He says, it's almost like, it can just bear with me a little bit while I deal with these foolish things. Verse 2, he says, "I am jealous for you with a godly jealousy. I so much want you to serve God." He says, "For I have betrothed you to a husband, that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ." The Bible uses that imagery a lot, doesn't it? About a Christian's relationship to the Lord, about the church's relationship to the Lord. Ephesians chapter 5 talks about the church being the bride of Jesus and compares us to it to a wife as Jesus is the husband. And so here, he uses this terminology. He says, "I have betrothed you. I have engaged you. I have promised you to a husband." And he says, when the time comes for me to be able to present you on the last day, at the end of time, when the time comes to present you to Christ, I want to be able to present you as a chaste virgin. What does that indicate about the way that they were living? Paul says, if we keep going down this path, I'm not going to be able to present you in that way. You need to remain pure and uncontaminated from these things. Verse 3, he says, "But I fear lest somehow, as the serpent deceived Eve by his" what? Craftiness? Anybody got a different word? Cunning? Cunningness? "The serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness." And Paul says, "I don't want that to happen to you so that your minds are corrupted and led away from the simplicity that is in Christ." The simplicity and the purity. "For he who is coming to you," in verse 4, "he who is coming to you is preaching another Jesus." How many Jesuses are there? Well, there's just one. But these people were trying to impose the Old Testament on these Christians as well as the New Testament. So they're preaching another Jesus to you, somebody who tries to follow the Old Testament too, whom we have not preached. "Or if you receive a different spirit." How many Holy Spirits are there? Well, there's just one, but when they're coming to you, they're trying to get you to believe and engage in following a different spirit with a different word, which you've not received, or a different gospel. How many gospels are there? Well, there's just one, but these individuals are coming in. And what they're doing is they're saying, okay, well, let's take the words of Paul, but don't forget that you must be circumcised. For unless one is circumcised, he cannot be saved. Those were the kind of things they were trying to bring in and to add to that which Paul had preached. And Paul says, you start adding to what God says and you're preaching another Jesus. If you start changing what the Lord taught, you might as well preach another Jesus. You might as well devote yourselves to a different spirit. You might as well follow a different gospel. Because if you're going to change God's will, that's the direction that you're going. Verse 5, there's some irony, there's almost some sarcasm. I don't know if we want to throw sarcasm at the feet of Paul, but there's almost some sarcasm in this chapter. He says in verse 5, "For I consider that I am not at all inferior to the most eminent apostles." And our first thought is he's talking about the apostles that followed Jesus, but he's not talking about those apostles. Look over in verse 13. These are the apostles that he's talking about. "For such, these deceitful workers, they are false apostles, transforming themselves, trying to make themselves, disguising themselves like they're apostles of Christ." So verse 5 is kind of a tongue-in-cheek, sarcastic comment. He says, "I am not at all inferior to the most eminent apostles." These guys who are coming in among you, they think that they are of the highest rank. They think that they are particularly chief in their regards to being an apostle. He says, "I'm not behind them. I'm not inferior to them, even though I am untrained in speech." There's another accusation that had been made against Paul. "Yeah, I'm unskilled in speech, yet I am not unskilled or untrained in knowledge. But we have been thoroughly manifested among you in all things. Did I commit sin in humbling myself that you might be exalted?" Was that wrong? Was I wrong in verse 7 where he says, "I preached the gospel to you free of charge"? Was it wrong for me to preach to you and not take your money? Verse 8, he says, "I robbed other churches." Is that literally? Did Paul literally go and rob other churches? No. It's a word kind of like Jesus saying, "Unless someone hate their father or mother." Well, good, I can go to heaven. I hate my mom. I hate my dad. I hate everybody in the world. Okay, I can go to heaven. It's a word that is used forcefully with not a literal meaning, but with an understanding that says, Paul says, I took money from other churches. I'm working with you and for you and among you, and yet I was receiving financial assistance from other places. What were those other churches getting for what I was doing? I was in effect robbing them, the idea that I'm taking from them. They're not getting anything from me. I took money from them, taking wages from them in order that I might minister and serve you. And when I was present with you and in need, I was a burden to no one. Who did I ask support from? Who did I go to their house and say, you got to help me? No, I was a burden to no one. For what I lacked, the brethren who came from Macedonia supplied. Remember last week we looked at chapters 8 and 9 where he bragged on the Macedonians. "And in everything I kept myself from being burdensome to you. I tried my hardest not to be a burden to you, and so that's the way I'm going to keep doing it. I will keep myself. As the truth of Christ is in me, no one shall stop me from this." And he says, why? Verse 11, "Because I don't love you." That's the accusation. The accusation against him was, well, Paul must not love you. He wouldn't even take money from you. He says, are you serious? God knows about this. Verse 12, "But what I do, I will also continue to do." I'm going to keep on doing it so that I might cut off, so that I might stop the opportunity from those who desire an opportunity to be regarded just as we are in the things of which they boast. I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing so that these false teachers, so that these critics can be cut off. Look at verses 13, 14, and 15. Very, very powerful words here. For such, these critics, these people trying to discredit Paul, they are false apostles. What does the word apostle mean? What is an apostle? What does that word mean? It's one who was sent. That's all that it means. It's one who was sent. So Paul says these are pseudo apostles. These are false apostles. The apostles of Christ, who were they sent by? Well, they're sent by Christ. Here are false apostles. Who have they been sent by? Well, they haven't been sent by Christ. They are deceitful workers. How deceitful are they? They are transforming themselves into apostles to look like apostles of Christ. How do you do that? How do you morph yourself? How do you transform yourself? How do you change yourself to look like an apostle of Christ? I mean, could... Okay. You will agree with them, as Bonnie says, you will agree with them on certain things at the beginning to try to... Try not to be too abrupt. Isn't that the way that the Bible describes the false doctrines? They come in steadily. They come in quietly. 2 Peter chapter 2 that says that they come in very secretly. 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 1. How would you make yourself look like an apostle? Anybody can put on a facade. What did you say, Corey?
You use
the same words. Now, the apostles had the ability to perform miracles. Could you do that? You could try to make it look that way. At some point, aren't fakes usually figured out? You know, it's hopefully at some point. Doesn't somebody usually wait? This person really, he's not really genuine in this. Paul says they're false apostles. In verse 14, he says, and no wonder. They're deceitful workers, verse 13. They transform themselves, and it's no wonder, verse 14, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. What does that mean? What is Satan able to do? He's able to deceive. Is he able to make good look bad? Is he able to make bad look good? Is he able to make wrong look right? Is he able to make right look wrong? Oh, he's crafty. So these false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ, where'd they get their tricks? No wonder. Satan himself transforms himself into a minister of light. Therefore, verse 15 is no great thing. Shouldn't be any surprise to us. If his, who's the his modifying in verse 15? Satan. If Satan's ministers, if his servants also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works. Shouldn't surprise us. If individuals can make themselves look like and sound like what they are doing and what they are saying is right. Well, how do we figure it out then? How do we figure out if somebody is speaking the truth genuinely, honestly, and fully, or if somebody is speaking the truth but maybe he's not speaking the whole truth? Okay, same way the Bereans did. What'd you say, Tommy? Yes. So we got two verses here, Acts 17 and verse 11. We need to be like the Bereans to look at everything that we hear, everything that we're taught, and see, are these things that I'm hearing, are they according to the Scriptures? 1 John chapter 4 and verse 1, Tommy says, is the verse that says, test the spirits, try the spirits, whether they are of God. Here's what I test them by. There's these false apostles. Here's these individuals who are trying to transform themselves into making it look like and sound right. And Paul says, watch out. Watch out, because their backing, their support is coming from the devil himself. Drop down to verse 22. We only have a couple minutes left. And here's a section in this chapter that we need to know about. Paul says in verse 22, are they Hebrews? Well, so am I. Are they Israelites? Yep, I am too. Are they the seed of Abraham? Uh-huh, me too. Are they ministers of Christ? I don't think so. I speak as a fool, I am more. Remember what he said over in verse 5. I'm not inferior to these eminent apostles. He said, if they think they are servants of Christ, they're fooling themselves. Look at what he says in verse 23 about what he had endured for the cause of Christ. If Paul was really the fake, if Paul was really the weakling that these critics were trying to make him out to be, why wouldn't he have just quit? Look at middle of verse 23 where he says, in labors, these trips to preach, more abundant. In stripes, the scourgings, the whippings that he received, he says, above measure. In prisons, more frequently. We know of at least five imprisonments of Paul, and there were more than that. In deaths, in the danger of death, often. Verse 24. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. The Jews were, they were so concerned about not breaking that law, they stopped at 39 just in case they miscounted. 5 times by the Jews. 3 times I was beaten with rods. That was a Roman punishment. Was Paul a Roman citizen? Did Roman citizens have rights? They were not to be beaten. 3 times that law was broken. He was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. We know of another one in Acts 27, which hadn't happened yet. A night and a day I have been in the deep. And journeys often, look at all these perils. In perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils of the city, in perils of the wilderness, in perils of the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and in toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Is Paul complaining? You big wimp. Stop complaining. Is he complaining? No. Paul says, as you read 2 Corinthians, as you read the book of Galatians, as you read sections of other books where Paul spends a great deal of time defending his apostleship, defending himself as an apostle, it was not because Paul got his feelings hurt. It was not because Paul was trying to defend himself, per se. Paul recognized that if they discredited him, then they would discredit everything that he taught. And Paul was not willing that the message of the gospel should be tarnished or should be disregarded. And so Paul went about defending who he was. And this accusation that Paul was the fake, these false teachers say, we're not the fakes, he's the fake. Paul says, if I'm a fake, why would I go through all of this? If I wasn't genuine, why would I go through all this? Verse 28, besides all of the other things, he says, forget all of this. He says, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches, which Corinth, that would include you too. Who is weak? And I am not weak. He's talking about his brethren. He's talking about how sympathetic he was. Who is made to stumble? And I am not there, burning with indignation. Paul tried to warm himself to these brethren. He tried to make it known to them that this wasn't about him. This was about Christ. This wasn't about his service. This was about drawing people closer to God. And these two chapters, I know we've spent a lot of time looking at these. These are a couple long chapters, and didn't have as much time for your comments and participation this morning. But spend time reading these chapters Read chapters 12 and 13. We'll look at those in 2 weeks and finish out the book. Thanks so much for your good attention this morning.